Today on Movie Oilers, we talk about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and Skyscraper. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Oilers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
We are once again well fed, courtesy of Yazdi.
No, you brought the chips.
We did actually bring the chips. We bought.
That was our contribution for all the delicious food we've ever eaten at Yazdi's.
But the chips.
We bought chips.
The chips would not have been devoured in anything like the time they have been devoured if it wasn't for this amazing guacamole that you brought.
Yeah.
Yes.
In a guacamole dish.
It's
guacamole in a guacamole dish.
Yes.
Trader Joe's reduced guilt chunky guacamole.
It doesn't seem reduced guilt.
No, it seems full guilt.
Once seems again, full guilt.
It does. It's very indulgent.
It's made from yogurt.
It feels
it's
very delicious. Luxurious.
Yeah, who would have thunk?
Why would you put yogurt into... Oh, to reduce the amount of avocado and the calories. Wow.
Those people at Trader Joe's are amazing.
That they are.
So, yes, indeed, we are once again well fed. We always eat well when we come to Yazdi's house.
He's That's
very...
That's not true.
He's
very
tea.
Giving. And if you're really interested in the guac, I Instagrammed it already. So instead of telling the listeners that we will Instagram a picture in the future, I
you
already
did it. Already.
I did it before the podcast was out.
You have like the gift of prophecy now. you kind of time traveled.
That's all very, very meta. In fact, what was very meta was Yazdi's avocado serving dish, which had avocado in it.
In it, exactly.
Yes, the serving dish is an avocado, and then you put avocado in it. It's very meta.
It is.
All right, enough babble. We have plenty to talk about this week, and because it's a two-episode podcast, we will return to doing our segment,
I can't find anything to watch on Netflix.
Which we... don't always get the chance to do because it feels like we're always playing catch up these days. But this is our segment where if you haven't heard the show before, then we talk about the fact that Netflix and various other streaming services are absolutely wonderful for movie fans, but it can be a nightmare trying to find things using the interfaces. And they all have these recommendation engines, but we always struggle to find something that we want to watch. And so... as our service to you, the listeners, we are trying to pick a movie. So, guys, what's in your Netflix or Amazon queues this week?
So the one in mine is a film that we watched a few years ago, and it's called Ain't Them Body Saints, which is directed by David Lowery, who recently did Ghost Story, which was that infamous movie where...
Rooney Mara ate a whole pie.
Yes, Rooney Mara ate a whole pie, but I was going to say that... Affleck.
That's a thing for you, right?
Casey Affleck.
Casey Affleck actually wore a sheet on his head for most of the movie as a ghost. So anyway, that's not the movie I'm recommending. I'm recommending Ain't Them Body Saints. And I know, Joe and Yassi, you didn't,
I saw it.
You didn't love it, did you? I fell in love with this. And let me just give you the quick intro. It's about an outlaw who basically comes back to town and, you know, has to sort of work his way through Texas to reunite with his lover. His love, the love of his life.
Great.
He's also badass, who's Rooney Mara.
Great performance by Ben Foster.
Ben Foster, yeah, Ben Foster. This is where he came to my consciousness. Lovely movie. Very Americana.
Very Americana.
Really good.
Yeah, I remember not loving it, but I remember also being very fascinated by it. It had a very specific feel to it that I felt like I hadn't seen at the time. And it was very odd that this director then went on to do Pete's Dragon, I think.
Yes, correct. Yes.
That's his Pete's next, Dragon. You know, there was Ghost Story you mentioned.
Correct.
But he did Pete's Dragon,
correct.
Yeah.
Correct, you are right.
Yeah, but the music and the cinematography, I mean, it's all very stylish. And it's, you know, I compare it to something like Hell or High Water. It's in that same universe.
It is, you're right.
But this one is far more stylized, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it has the hallmarks of kind of a directorial debut. I think, you know, this is somebody who wants to show the skills that they have and demonstrate them to us. But instead of it being, you know, clunky, like some of those debuts can be, I felt like this one worked for all of that. So, yeah, great pick.
Yep.
Yes, Dee.
So are we doing the linked one or should I do the other one, Joseph?
Well, I'm intending to do Fan 3.
So, okay, so
I'll,
then
I'll let you do yours first.
So why don't you do Fan 3 and then okay. Mine will be a follow-up to that.
So Fan 3 is, I'm going to have to spell this for you because I don't know that anyone will, what language is this in?
Marathi. It's in Marathi, yes.
Marathi. Nobody will probably know that word unless they happen to speak Marathi. So it's Fandry, and it's a movie that we saw like 4 or 5 years ago, I think, mm-hmm, at the mm-hmm. Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles, which, you know, for those who are listening and, you know, you think of Indian cinema as, you know, Bollywood and singing, dancing colors, many, many of the things that Bollywood can be. This isn't that. This is a very small film about a young lad who falls in love with his classmate, but belongs to a lower caste. This movie had us all spellbound, I remember, when we saw it. This was, you know, you kind of go to an Indian film festival with certain preconceived ideas. I think at least I certainly did. And I came out of the experience of watching this kind of forever changed. I think it opened my worldview to what Indian cinema can be, especially modern Indian cinema. You know, it's got some very challenging things. It doesn't shy away from anything. It's not the kind of squalor porn that,
Slumdog Millionaire
and
like
those
that.
Kind of things. But it's just a wonderful story. Yeah. It's a terrific way to spend an hour and a half on Netflix.
And what I really like about that movie is that this is my frequent complaint that movies are too scared. They don't want to offend anyone. And this movie is so strong politically, and it's actually the end of the movie is a call to arms.
Yes.
You know, it's like you cannot sit down and let this go on. It's about the unfairness of the caste system in India. Yeah. And it's like a violent call to arms. It's beautiful. It's just a true rousing piece of art.
But again, it's one of those movies where a lot of it rests on the shoulders of a child actor, and he's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, it's
really good pick.
Wonderful piece of
work.
And
remind us, Yasdi, what does Fandry mean? Pig?
I think it means pig. Yes. It means in the Kaikadi language, it means pig.
Okay.
Yeah.
Quick.
So my recommendation is actually the second film made by the same director. So now, this particular director, his name is Nagaraj Manjule. Remember, he had come for the
Correct.
Film festival.
He couldn't even speak English.
He couldn't
remember?
Speak English, and yeah. he had a
kind of like an interpreter. Yeah.
He had an interpreter with him. He made Fandry. Fandry was a great movie. It won the National Award in India. It won the Bombay Film Festival Award.
And I should mention that it also won the Indian Film Festival
that year. It won
LA the Best Movie.
Best Movie.
So good.
And that movie could not make it through commercially, right? It didn't do a lot commercially. So the same director decided that he can tackle those same issues by packaging it in a more commercially agreeable form.
Wow.
And the second movie that he made is called Sairat, Sairat. And Sairat, unlike Fandry, is a 3-hour-long movie.
Oh.
It takes its time, and it's very similar in theme to Fandry. It tells the story about this boy who's a mechanic. He's from the lowest of the lowest caste, and he dares to fall in love with the girl who is, the wealthiest landowner's daughter. And what's amazing about this movie is that she, the character of the female lead, she's very forthright. She knows what she wants. She is not ashamed that she falls in love with somebody who is several rungs down on the ladder socioeconomically. And it becomes kind of a Romeo and Juliet, but it's just like Fandry. This movie is completely rooted in the real here and now. You can taste the grime. You can see the mud. It's like, it's so realistic. And this movie that he made went on to become the highest grossing Marathi film ever in
wow.
India. Sairat was the movie, the
That's
second movie
great.
That he made. And now it turns out that Karan Johar, everybody knows
yeah.
Karan Johar, he has financed the Hindi remake of Sairat, which is right now, as of this weekend, the number one Hindi movie. It's called Dhadak. Not
wow.
Dhanak, but Dhadak. It's playing right now. And it's got Sridevi's daughter in it. So there's all this meta stuff going on, but A lot of people who have seen the new Hindi version are saying that that's a little too glitzy and that you should just go back and watch Sai Raat. And I watched Sai Raat, and it took me 2 days to watch it because it's a three-hour-long movie, and it just absolutely gutted me. The first half an hour is a little wobbly. It's very rough around the edges, but if you make it through the first half hour, it's just remarkable.
I've just added it to our watch list.
So Sai Raat, S-A-I-R-A-T.
Terrific. So, yes. As Sai Raat, we have Ain't Them Body Saints and
Fundry.
So, apologies for those who are listening without a pen and paper to hand, because, but I will try and put these in the show notes because I think they're movies that are worth seeking out, and their names will probably not have that much appeal to many audiences on Netflix, but they're definitely good use of your time. So. Plenty to watch as always on the streaming services. We are gluttons.
Yeah, I think all three of those movies, no matter which one you pick, will give you a sense of actually being in a particular place and a particular time. They have a really good, there's nothing movie-like about them. They're all very grounded in the world that they are set in.
Good.
Great picks, guys.
Indeed. On to then our movies of the week. We have Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and Skyscraper. So where would you like
Let's start with Skyscraper.
All right. So Yasti, I think.
Nope, Rashmi.
Rashmi.
So I missed this one. Boo-hoo. and it has one of my favorite people, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
And you missed it because you were out of town.
I did. I didn't miss it through choice.
This wasn't one of those ones that all of a sudden you couldn't make it to the theater.
No, I didn't have a headache that night. Yeah. Okay, so a father, this is the description I think I need to give. A father goes to great lengths to save his family from a burning skyscraper. It's directed and written by Rawson Marshall Thurber, and it stars Dwayne Johnson, Neve Campbell, Chin Han, and a few others. And the pictures look like it's just Dwayne Johnson doing Dwayne Johnson again. But I was interested to see Neve Campbell make an appearance again because she hasn't really had a heyday since the Scream movies, I feel, or Party of Five.
She just disappeared for a while. Yeah.
So I sneaked and looked at the tomatometer, and it's running at exactly 50%. So should I or shouldn't I? And remember, I have MoviePass.
We should talk about MoviePass sometime.
We will.
That's a good debate worth having.
We will.
But not today.
So, Yazdi.
I think you should.
Okay.
We'll talk about this with some other movies that we're going to discuss later on. But nobody's going to accuse this of being a good film. I don't think it's a good film. It wants to be a B-movie, and it is a B-movie. It completely sits, like, almost shamelessly on the shoulders of Die Hard.
Okay.
I'm just going to say it up. It's kind of a weird blend of Die Hard.
Or the Towering Inferno.
Of Die Hard and the Towering Inferno.
Okay, because that's what I kind of figured from the trailer.
Right. And even as you said, the premise, right, that this father has to come and save his family from this building, which is in jeopardy. That's Die Hard. It's also Towering Inferno. Is it a great movie? Again, no. But it could have been so much better. I think if it had a better script, number one, and if it had a better bad guy. But there's so many. And then the other thing, I think a lot of reviewers have mentioned this, is the fact that so much of the CGI looked fake to me, like the fire looked fake to me. So I never really felt a sense of peril for these people. I felt like it was all done in a green room somewhere. But I think there's enough going for the movie, and we'll talk about that some more. And I think chief among them are the two lead actors, Neve Campbell and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But it's the definition of a summer movie. You don't expect War and Peace or anything. You just go to get some cold air conditioning on a hot summer day and have some fun.
So, Joe, I know you are a huge The Rock fan. And as I'm looking at this director's credits, he also did Where the Millers and Easy A, and I know you liked Easy A.
As well as Dodgeball. Movie.
Yes.
And Dodgeball.
So
this is, as Yasti said, this is pure mindless popcorn. And yes, I'm a huge fan of The Rock. I mean, I'm going to quote Yasti here because I find Yasti very quotable on certain things. But he seems to know what movie he is mm-hmm. in constantly. And right. I love that sensibility about him when he's in these big action flicks,
yep.
playing a larger-than-life superhero. But there's kind of a nudge and a wink behind it all. But he also, you know, he plays it straight enough so that if you're into the movie, you know, you believe it. But you also know that, you know, he's got this kind of charm that, you know, he's kind of smiling at you, right?
Yeah.
You know, despite the circumstances. And he's doing that all the way through this movie too. So, yes, it's charming because he is the lead and he's always fun to watch. He has, you know, very good comedic timing when he needs to. He can play it straight when he needs to. But I can't forgive this movie for its complete and utter laziness. There is absolutely no tension in this movie. There's no attempt to conceal the drama of the movie. We know exactly what's going to play out. Who's the bad guys? Who's, you know, there's the, you know, I think there is kind of a little bit of a double, you know, cross slash twist in the movie, but it gives itself up the moment it presents itself. So instead of, you know, persisting for a while through the movie, you know, 10 minutes after we get some information, we get the reveal and it's like, okay. And it does that all the way. So it just felt like really, really, really lazy screenwriting. And I know it's a vehicle to show off, you know, CGI and special effects and have big blasts and stunts and things like that. But it was unforgivably lazy, even for a summer flick. And okay. I was super annoyed by that.
Okay, I agree with you. I think, you know, I think there was a time in the late 70s, early 80s, when Hollywood had perfected the disaster movie and mm-hmm. when it is like Poseidon Adventure and
yeah.
Towering Inferno. And, you know, when it's done well, or even the first two Alien movies I would put in the same category.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They can build a remarkable sense of claustrophobia. Now, most of this movie plays out in this, you know, high skyscraper, which is ostensibly burning. Like you, I never felt a sense of claustrophobia. I never felt a sense of peril.
Yeah.
There is this, you know, at the center of this whole movie is this stunt. It's in all the posters of him jumping off from a crane into yeah. this building. And even that looked to me like it looked like it was done in a CGI studio somewhere. I mean, you know,
it was great. It looked like old school green screen.
Right. It looked like old school. So it seems like a lost opportunity for me that they could have made something really airtight and scary. And maybe they were too scared to make the movie too fearsome for fear that they might lose the summer kids audience. I mm-hmm. don't know what it was, but it could have definitely used a little bit more adrenaline. I agree with you. What I did like about it was that I really like the Neve Campbell character. I mean, I love Neve Campbell, and she is like not aged at all, it seems like, since, you know, since when we last saw her. And she's not the whimpering, suffering wife like, you know, the Bonnie character from Die Hard who just needs saving. She is, you know.
Yeah, she comes across pretty badass in the trailer.
She is. And, you know, the movie very conveniently, you know, gives her a backstory that she used to be in the Navy as well.
Right.
She was a Navy physician, but she gets to kind of do a little bit of stunts.
But therein lies the laziness for me, and sorry to interrupt, but the backstory could have been given to us in some other way other than, right, let's give her a line about she used to be a badass Navy SEAL or whatever it is, and then, you know, cue next scene, she's doing badass Navy SEALness, and it's like, okay, come on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It just felt lazy. Sorry.
The other piece which I really liked was that, you know, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is always so invincible in all of his movies. And in this particular movie, there's a preface at the start, which happens 10 years before the events of the actual movie, where, you know, he goes through, there's a particular event which plays out, which makes him lose his leg. So he actually wears a prosthetic from the knee down on one of his legs. And initially it just feels like, you know.
Did anyone say he got it eaten in Rampage?
It's a good one.
I would have loved something like that to be thrown in here.
But what happens is it's not just left like that. I really like that. At least that part was not lazy, where the movie, during the course of the various adventures and obstacles he has to go through, he makes good use of his prosthetic leg. I mean, his prosthetic leg is used quite creatively a few times.
Do you think
know?
It was sponsored by the prosthetic leg company?
Maybe, but I mean, it didn't have to be. So I really like that piece. And, you know, no, I don't think it was done by the president.
You completely ignored me, but okay, that's right. Really,
I'm not joking about prosthetic legs on this podcast.
Right. But, that would be a lot of editing.
But, I like that. I mean, I think, and then I also think that it's kind of unfair. I always have a problem with movies which create tension by putting children in peril. And, you know, the movie does not too much of it, but a little bit of it. Like, don't make me care for this movie because these two adorable kids, their life is at danger. That seems like a low-hanging fruit to me. So, anyway, let's just say this. I enjoyed it more than I expected to. The other thing also I think I'm really worried about is that this is The Rock's third movie in 2018. He was in Jumanji,
correct.
He was in Rampage, and yep. Now he's in Skyscraper. They all came within 2 hours of each other.
Yeah.
Not 2 hours, sorry, 2 months of each other.
But it feels like 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's already July, and we have seen three movies with him, and I think Skyscraper did much worse than expected at the box office, and I don't know if it's just because it might be an inferior film, although I don't think it's much worse than Rampage. But I think it's because it's saturated. People, you know, there's too much The Rock right now, and, you know, I think he needs to be careful not to kind of over-familiarize himself. I mean, he's such a good actor. And, you know, I'm looking on IMDb right now, and he has four movies coming out in 2019.
Yeah.
So he needs to kind of slow down a little bit. I know he's hardworking, and I know he's a great movie presence, yeah. But a little bit of The Rock goes a long ways.
Yeah. So your score sounded like
My score, 6 out of 10, a very generous 6 out of 10. It's fun, and I'd really, really like to see Neve Campbell back. Come back. Welcome back. Come to other movies.
Joe.
I mean, you know, maybe we lost a little because the screening that we saw was not 3D, and I think maybe some of the sense of danger may have been visual, which we didn't get. But I'm not a fan of 3D, and so I don't think that as a gimmick that would have added much to the movie. So I just thought I'd make mention of that because that could have been why everything looked a little, you know, and pun intended, but a little flat to us.
He's a security expert in this movie, and he's been hired to kind of render, you know, state-of-the-art security to this building in Hong Kong, which is state-of-the-art and hasn't been fully populated with people. And so his family comes and stays there while he's working on security. And then in the middle of this building, there's this generator, which is this circling thing.
Mm-hmm.
That looked really cheap. It looked really CGI. I mean, I cannot believe that a real building would have that.
Right. I'm sure it shows its... plot.
Well, the building had appearance. Very little in the way of plausible design.
Correct.
I mean, I think that's also kind of what is off-putting because you have to have a sense that this thing could exist in outside of the movie, even if it's fantastical. And put simply, the whole thing seemed ridiculous as a construct. And you know, the movie's based around us buying into this. Larger than life, you know, twice as tall as the Burj, Dubai.
And, you know, compare that to, you know, Tom Hanks hanging off the side of Burj Khalifa in one of the Mission Impossible, I think it was Ghost Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
That movie.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Tom Hanks can hang with the best of them. Tom Cruise.
That would be a very different movie if Tom Cruise was hanging off the Burj Khalifa. Yeah.
Tom Cruise. But... That I feared for his safety.
I did,
here
yeah.
he's spidering all the way across this building, and I never kind of feared for his safety. Yeah. One other thing I want to say.
He's not going to let me score this one.
I'm sorry.
I know.
It's okay.
It's birthday Yazdi again.
Oh, yeah. It's birthday month. No, all of our birthdays are coming.
He's back.
Okay. There is one particular piece at the end, which is a direct, complete lift from Die Hard. And it really bothered me. I hope it's the director's idea of an homage, because if not, it's a really cheap thing to do. And I won't give it away because it happens at the very end. But it was like a scene-for-scene reproduction,
yes.
Which really bothered me.
To do with rooftops.
Correct.
Yes, I noticed that too. And I think it was an homage. So now that he's finally given me the floor back, I'm going to give this a generous 5 out of 10 because it is okay. It's a popcorn flick. If you have MoviePass and you can get in for free and you've got absolutely nothing else that piques your interest, then sure. But I mean, it's really not a good movie, and it felt very, very lazy to me. Mm. You know, the whole security system of this building, you know, exists in an iPad, and so guess what all the bad guys are after? I mean, it's that kind of like cheesy, you know, nonsense. You know, that's just simply it's too lazy. So 5 out of 10. And okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I always enjoy rock movies more, so that's why I think I'm annoyed by this one, right? Because even though his charisma can't carry this one for me.
Yeah, and yet, on its own, at the back of an airplane, it's perfectly serviceable, I think.
Okay. But again, it relies on the big screen to deliver its thrills. And so. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on, then, movie number 2 is Mamma Mia. Here we go again. So I think I'm introing this one.
Yes. Do you want to maybe? Yazdi is.
Yeah, no, Yazdi is. That's right.
You're happy to.
Rashmi switched on us just before the podcast, and I didn't write anything down, so it's gone.
Joe was going to whistle the intro.
We'll come back to
that.
Yazdi, tell us about Mamma Mia.
So ABBA, ABBA. Based on the first letters of
You need to spell it out. The entire world.
Of the four Swedish.
Imagine if anyone's listening to this, they don't know who ABBA is.
ABBA?
Well, just some millennials.
Yes.
I think a lot of young people may not know who ABBA is.
I don't think they listen to
them. Shame on them.
Yes. So it's based on the first letters of the two guys and two girls who formed this Swedish pop group, which was like at the top of the charts all over in the late 60s, early 70s. Their music was very popular, and then it kind of waned off. And then 10 years ago, about 15 years ago, a Broadway musical called Mamma Mia came up, which was a loosely constructed plot device to permit the inclusion of as many ABBA songs as possible into this particular musical. That musical became a big hit on Broadway. And subsequent to that, the movie adaptation of that Broadway musical showed up in theater screens almost exactly 10 years ago, to the weekend, yes. And that was the original Mamma Mia movie, which had Meryl Streep and Christine Baranski and Julie Walters, and then Pierce Brosnan,
Amanda Seyfried,
and
Colin Firth,
and then the Swedish guy,
yes,
Skarsgård,
the father.
Yeah, yes. That was a movie which cost about I think $35 million to make, and it broke box office records, and people were singing in the aisles, and it was a big deal. And now 10 years ago, we have the second version of it, or the first sequel to Mamma Mia. It's directed by Ole Parker. And if I had to change my name, I might change my name to Ole Parker.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, it's O-L.
Is it really?
Yeah. Ole Parker.
It's Ole Parker. But anyway, so Ole Parker has written and directed this particular movie. And it's interesting because it's simultaneously a prequel and a sequel to the original movie.
Hmm.
And essentially what it does...
Does that mean we won't get any more?
I don't know. Are you threatening? Are you hoping? So the second version of this particular movie relies on the backstory of the Donna character, which was played by Meryl Streep in the first movie. And we have Lily James playing that character. And it kind of explains how she was at university and how she came about in the situation that she did in the first movie, where essentially she had a child whose parentage was sort of in the to-be-decided category, undecided, because she happened to be with three different men over a short period of time, and any one of them could be the father. And so this movie kind of flashes back in time to kind of walk us through that experience. And at the same time, the Amanda Seyfried character now is looking to open a hotel, and she's invited all three of her fathers back there. And that's essentially the story. Again, a kind of a device to tie in as many ABBA songs as possible. Now, will this movie be as much of a big hit as the original one was?
Freudian slip.
What did you guys think of Mamma Mia 2? Here we go again.
Okay, so if you didn't like the first one, don't watch this one. My complaint about the first one, which I literally finished watching about an hour before the subsequent one started, was that they really should have got people who could sing and dance and act in this type of movie. And I think that's been taken care of in this version with an adorable Lily James mm-hmm. and Amanda Seyfried carrying most of that on their shoulders. I think Lily James is a delight to watch, but overall I feel like this is an opportunity to see a square peg, which is ABBA songs, and they're very enjoyable and they're great to sing along to, sledgehammered into a round hole, which is making any type of movie which is coherent in story.
Wow.
Joseph? Yeah.
So I have a secret. I kind of liked the original Mamma Mia.
Yeah, I liked the original one too.
For whatever it was, it had this kind of charm. I mean, the ABBA songs are what make it. I think, you know, I also have another secret. I kind of a huge closet ABBA fan. So
I didn't know closet about it.
Okay, well.
Cupboard's wide open.
So
I think I don't know if anybody who hates ABBA.
Yeah, I didn't know anyone who would hate ABBA songs.
Well, yeah, so it's very hard to dislike being 90 minutes in the company of ABBA Gold, mm-hmm. despite who's singing it, unless they're butchering it. I mean, I can listen to ABBA songs done karaoke and, you know, by the worst voice in the world and still yes, enjoy them.
No, you don't want to hear me sing ABBA songs.
Yes, he's not the karaoke champion. So it's really hard to review something like this objectively. You know, you hear the songs back to back.
Yep.
You see the visuals and all of the performances here are delightful, from the young characters to the old characters to the male characters, and they're all having fun with it, and they're all, you know, really committing to these roles, which are, you know, completely nonsensical. And you're right, Rashmi. I mean, they've shoehorned the entire ABBA back catalogue into a script and made it work. And the songs have kind of sort, you know, I feel like the context is less clever than in the original Mamma Mia. So, you know, they don't fit the plot as well. They just kind of say, oh, here's a moment for a song, let's throw one in and it can be whatever.
Yeah, there's one line that loosely works.
But it worked for me. I have been singing these songs nonstop since.
Whistling
the songs, yeah, nonstop since.
That was a heavy sigh.
I was smiling ear to ear from the moment we got into the theatre. And my only real criticism is maybe it was the crowd that we saw it with, but our crowd was not having fun.
I know. You and I were like bopping our feet.
I was literally trying to keep my feet still.
Right. I was like, yeah.
And then, you know, when Dancing Queen plays, I'm like ready to just burst into song with the whole thing. And our audience was very stifled. So I think this is one that I would love to have seen on opening night with the real fans, because the screen.
That's a really good point.
Sing along, Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Because I think
I would love
it. It would have felt like a party.
I would love to do the sing along one.
So, a long way of saying, I thought it was great.
Yes, D.
So, remember for Skyscraper, I said that's a bad movie. I think this one is objectively even more so a bad movie. I think it's amateurish.
I know.
Right, it's amateurish. And it's a shame because these actors could not be more game. I mean, this is such a game group of actors. And I can sense that they had so much fun while making this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
And come on, give them something to really latch onto and take off. I mean, there are song after songs where they almost like it's like the plane taxiing on to take off and then it kind of pulls back. And,
yeah.
And so it kind of, it's so weird that there's this movie which is not good. It's not well constructed together, but everybody in it is so good. And it's a question of at what point do you surrender to what's going on the screen. And I think the reason why, you know, gosh, what is it now? 50 years later, you know, ABBA is still on, even before Mamma Mia came out, ABBA Gold is perennially on the iTunes top 100, is because of those melodies. Those melodies are literally pure gold. I mean, every one of them is an earworm, okay? Once it gets in your head, you're not able to get it. They're such good melodies. And so when it's being sung with love and it's sung with joy, you can't help but kind of, you know, get swept into it. And, you know, I really commend these actors. I mean, whoever decided to hire Lily James, you know, to play the young Meryl Streep.
Great choice.
Great choice, because on the face of it, that character is a little bit, and I don't want to sound judgy, but that character is a little bit slutty, right?
I was going to say the same thing.
She slept with three guys, and she doesn't know who the father is in a very short period of time. But Lily James makes it work. I didn't judge her to be particularly. There's an infectiousness about her.
It's a youthfulness, right? I mean, I think it captures the youthfulness. The stupidity of youthfulness.
Right.
That's what she manages to capture. But
yeah,
I found the same thing. I was like, really? That's really quick.
Oh, you sexist pair. If she was a guy, we would be patting her on the back and saying, you know, three conquests in a short period of time.
No, we wouldn't.
Okay, maybe, yes, we would.
No, no, I'm not judging her. I love the fact she can sleep with five men. No, but my point is this actor, she really makes it work.
She's joyful.
And she has a lovely voice.
She's beautiful to watch.
She's beautiful to watch. The clothes are made for her. And, you know, none of her singing and jumping feels put on or awkward. It feels like she's actually jumping out, you know, in her skin.
I feel like she probably does that in her kitchen.
I hope so. And I, you know, there's
feels like her personality somehow. I mean, I know nothing about it. She was Beauty and the Beast, wasn't she?
Correct.
No.
And she was,
Cinderella.
But she became famous for being in Downton Abbey.
Right, she started in Downton Abbey.
I see. Okay.
She was in Cinderella, and she was in that movie, Baby Driver. Remember?
Correct.
She was the waitress.
Yeah, that's
correct.
Right. That's right.
Correct.
But I didn't know there was nothing in her filmography which tells me that she could sing so well, and she really sings well. But the person who really amazed me, and I'd forgotten about this from the first Mamma Mia, is what a fine voice Amanda Seyfried has.
Yes,
her voice is so good.
Beautiful.
I mean,
just.
So anyway, so all these, and you know, I would love to see a movie with just the three fathers, like Colin Firth and Stellan Sarsgaard and
Pierce Brosnan.
I mean, they don't have nearly enough to do. And the only other complaint I have about the movie, I'm sorry, this is not my intro, I'm just going through the whole movie. But the only other thing I want to mention, should I stop? Maybe I'll stop.
You can go.
Keep going.
Is it seems, again, I only know so many ABBA songs, okay? So it seems like all the good songs were already used up in the first movie.
Yes.
And these all seem like the second tier songs. So there's 18 songs in this movie.
It felt like there was some made just for the movie. There were some that I didn't recognize. I didn't know if there were additional songs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I knew maybe
there were some
five out of
there
the
were
eight.
Many
yeah.
repeats.
Yeah, there were a few repeats, but I knew like five of them. And so I couldn't, you know, bop along through the whole movie. I just was looking forward to finding a familiar one. But
I think,
go on.
Yeah, I Kissed the Teacher was the one that started the movie. And I felt like maybe they could have gone out with more energy with one of the popular songs, because I think that would have got the audience going a bit
more. But the scene itself was very colourful, I think.
No, look, everything in this movie is colourful. I think every time we hear the music play, It's a joyful moment. There's not, you know, Cher comes in and Cher. I mean, what a bizarre moment that she has.
And she looks younger. She looks as young as Amanda Seyfried. I mean, it's ridiculous.
No, she doesn't.
And you know,
but her plastic surgeon should hopefully win some awards for the work that he's done here, because you're right. She's very very.
That
it's
is
very
a gimmick.
Well so I think
and it felt like a gimmick, and
I
never bought it.
I wish they hadn't done that. I mean, again, I sounded in my intro like I hated it, and I didn't hate it. I just feel it's the most contrived movie that has ever been made.
Of course.
I mean, but I think it's got terrific energy to what you were saying, Yazdi.
Right.
And I think they've really amped up the gloss, because I had the luxury, the good fortune of literally watching the first one, because I had escaped the first one for the last 10 years, literally minutes before we saw this one. And the production value's definitely up, which I kind of liked. I don't know. It's I just found contrived is the word that keeps coming to my head. I mean, I kept thinking, how can you have two American girls who become best friends with an English girl at Cambridge University? I mean, it was just too. Right. I don't know if you got that. Yeah, but
wait,
I mean, it's all very.
Let's remember. This is a musical.
Right. I know.
This is built
but why
around.
Why do they have to have?
But no, but
I know.
This is built around songs.
I know.
This is
I know,
loose,
but what is the need for Donna to have graduated from Cambridge University? There's no need.
It's a sequel to what was originally a terrible idea.
Right.
Which is make these songs into a story.
Sure.
And so now they're just saying to heck.
Correct.
It.
Yeah, they're let's have them flying in space.
Throwing caution to the wind, because at the end of the day, the story doesn't matter here.
Correct.
Yeah.
No, none of it matters. Correct. We're just like seeing little bits of filler.
Yeah.
To give us the excuse to have 18 songs play.
Correct.
That we all love.
Yeah.
So I think, you know.
13 of which we know really well. Or five.
I knew only five. I knew only five. Yeah.
So, you know.
I was like, Waterloo came along. Oh, yes, this one I know. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to that end, none of it actually matters. Yeah. I think what it comes down to for me is if this had been 18 ABBA pop videos strung together over 90 minutes, I'd have enjoyed it just as much.
Sure.
Because I enjoyed the music, and okay, the rest of it was fluff. So for me, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10, which seems really stingy, because I enjoyed it more than that. And unlike Skyscraper, I would happily watch this again. And yeah. I would watch it again on the back of an airplane. I would watch it again on DVD. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a time when putting this film on would do anything other than make me smile. So for that, it gets a very stingy 7 out of 10.
Yes, D.
I just love that this movie gives an opportunity for these actors who are kind of not, you know, we don't see very often, like Amanda Seyfried seems to have fallen off the edge of the planet. And to have her get a starring role, Christine Baranski has like a few lines, but she completely nails every single one of them. Likewise with Julie Walters. So
right.
These are such good troopers.
Super troopers.
Joe.
I'm sorry. I'm going to start whistling in a minute, right?
No, please don't. Okay.
I think the ineptitude of the movie is ultimately laid siege by the infectiousness of the songs and this cast, which is so game. So I enjoyed it, even though I was simultaneously aware of how what an awful product the movie is. So 7 out of 10, this is what summer should be. It should be nonsense, inane, colorful, beautifully choreographed, you know, Greek island, people dancing, doing ridiculous things.
But not sleeping with three men in a short period of time.
No, people should sleep with four, five, six, you know, men or women, whoever they want.
We do not advocate unsafe sex on this show.
I do. I advocate safe sex with a lot of people.
Times were different.
The times are different. So 7 out of 10 for me as well.
ABBA endures, the film won't. 5 out of 10.
Really? Okay.
Wow.
I love the songs. Look, I love the songs. And I had a big smile too. It's too contrived.
Yeah.
It is contrived, yes.
Okay. Well, we have another podcast to record. So join us in a few days' time when we publish our podcast of 8th grade. And don't worry, he won't get away on foot. Those are our next movies that we're going to record. So if you like the podcast and you're still listening, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/movieallers, twitter.com/movieallers, instagram.com/movieallers as well, to look at the wonderful plate of guacamole that Yazdi has served upon us today. And come back next time. So until then, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Papa, chupapa. Chupapa, chupapa.